Okay, it looks to me like council now are both online, correct, Marshall? Okay, so I am going to call our second case of the day, Quick Charge versus Josh Call. And Attorney Obagali, I think that you are the leadoff hitter. Do you want to begin, please?
Yes, Justices. Good morning. My name is Attorney Emil Oviagale, and I, along with my co-counsel, Attorney Samantha Huddleston, who's also present here, represent the appellants in this matter. I want to thank the court for the opportunity to present arguments today, despite the unique circumstances that we're all faced with. Now, we're here today to discuss some very important issues of first impression. At the heart of today's matter lies a simple question. What is the utility and legality of facilitating promotions and sweepstakes with the use of a device in the state of Wisconsin in the 21st century? The appellants request that this court declare that Wisconsin law does not prescribe the use of a device to facilitate a promotion or sweepstakes where no purchase is necessary. Now, a brief background on the device that we're here talking about and the promotion, because those concepts and the difference are quite important. When talking about a promotion, you're talking about a marketing activity. And when talking about the charging station in question here, you're talking about a physical manifestation. A couple of years ago, the appellant developed a cell phone charging station that provided electricity on the go for public, for the public, for people who wanted to charge their mobile devices on the go. The enterprise was built around the business proposition of customers paying to charge their devices in accessible ways. To raise awareness of its product, the appellants devised a promotional sweepstakes to offer customers a chance to win a prize along with the purchase of time to charge the devices on the go.
Counsel, could we explore that question just a little bit? On page 5 of your reply brief, you say the purpose of the charging kiosks is to sell electricity used for charging mobile devices, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So when someone deposits a dollar into one of your machines, is he buying 60 seconds of charging time or an opportunity to win a prize?
They're buying 60 seconds of charging time, Your Honor.
Okay. So let me, at page 9 of the state's brief, they write, a customer need not use any game credits while charging a phone and can instead redeem all the credits for cash when the charging time expires. Is that correct?
Yes, but the crucial missing fact or assumption is that the customer doesn't get what it pays for. You always get electricity. So it's akin to me going to a McDonald's and deciding to play the sweepstakes Monopoly game there. Buying 5 Big Macs, I could choose to eat my 5 Big Macs or I could toss my Big Macs away. Either way, I get the Big Mac.
Now, either way, you have to pay for the Big Macs, right? I mean, here you can go to one of your kiosks and you can get free recharge, correct?
Yes. So you're never required to pay to play. It's no different than promotional sweepstakes that are ran with products or the whole idea of buying one and getting one free. So if you were to buy a Coca-Cola on a sweepstakes promotion where you buy one and get one free, just because you're getting a Coca-Cola or another Coca-Cola doesn't mean that you're not getting an initial purchase. So
But in this case, you don't have to buy the first Coca-Cola. Right? You get the recharging for free if you want to.
Exactly. You don't have to. And that's crucial to the reasons why we think that it is necessary to clarify that a use of devices alone cannot make a promotion that otherwise would be legal prescribed by law, because there is no consideration.
Right. But isn't the issue here then which one of these is the promotion? Right? Generally speaking, you don't have to pay for the promotion. You have to pay for the product. But if the product is free and you have to pay for the promotion, then aren't you actually selling the promotion?
No, Your Honor. The product is never free. You always have to pay for the product. As a matter of fact,
if you said the product is charging is the electricity, but you don't have to pay for the electricity. You can put in the dollar. You can charge your phone for the minute, and you get the dollar back, right?
No. So what happens again is you get a price. So initially, the way this was devised was to get people used to the idea of plugging their phones into charging boxes randomly placed, especially in the age of cybersecurity concerns. Again, it is no different than buy one, get one free type promotions. Those are illegal promotions. So what you do get, as a matter of fact, so you can interact with the charging station in one of three ways. You can put a dollar in. You get a minute of charging time, and you get 100 points in which you could decide to participate in a promotion with. Now, you could choose not to participate in a promotion. If used that way, there is no chance. So if used in the way Your Honor has just described, and the way the state describes it, it doesn't necessarily make the promotion or the device prescribed by law, because under those circumstances, there is no chance.
Well, there's also no purchase of a product, because you're not actually paying for the electricity.
You are getting a gift on a prize under those circumstances, because again, it's typical and it's very similar to how buy one get one free promotions work. Now, these are marketing devices. There are countless marketing devices that are meant to just initially, in the initial phases, attract customers to build some sort of brand identity with the promoter, or to get customers to get over the initial hump of plugging their devices into this mystery box. Again, given the context of the time, at the heart of every sweepstakes and advertising venture is the idea of, how do you get customers to buy more of your product? How do you build loyalty? How do you foster some sense of trust between yourself and your customer? So again, if used for purposes of analyzing whether or not this is illegal any sort of gambling activity, if used as described, there is no chance. If you put in a dollar and you charge your phone and the promoter decides to give you 100 points back for using the device and to build customer loyalty, you have not wagered anything. There is no chance.
If you use any of those credits to participate in the promotion, then that's the only thing you're actually paying for, right?
No.
If you can get the electricity for free by putting in the dollar, letting the phone charge for a minute, and then taking the credits back out and getting the dollar returns, then you've not paid anything for the charging. And the only time you would actually pay anything is if you participated in the promotion, right?
No, because you always get the electricity. Whether or not you choose to charge your phone is different, because whenever you put that dollar in, you get 60 seconds of charging time. Whether or not you choose to use it is a different proposition. And for putting in...
I don't think you're understanding my question. Someone comes to one of your machines and does want to use the electricity, plugs their phone in, plugs in a dollar, lets it sit for a minute, and then they get their dollar back. They haven't paid for the electricity that they actually used, correct?
They have paid but for you inserting that dollar, you don't get 60 minutes, you don't get 60 seconds as a reward for participating or at least using the machine. And again, you have to realize when this case was brought forth, that was how the promotion was ran, to incentivize people to get used to the idea of plugging their mobile devices into a mystery box. In light of cybersecurity concerns, so
right. so you use the example of going to I think Burger King,
yes.
And so wouldn't the proper analogy be, you go to Burger King, you give them the I don't know, $4, whatever a burger costs these days. And then you eat the burger, and then you hand the receipt back to them and say, now I'd like my $4 back, right? Wouldn't that be the analogy?
No, because we're stuck on the idea that you're getting points, you're getting money, you're getting a price. So if you were to go to Burger King and they ran a promotion, and McDonald's happens to be one of my favorite fast food ventures, and every now and then they run the McDoubles where you get one, you buy one, you get one free. Under those circumstances, you're still paying to get the first one, and you're just getting an additional price for participating in that sweepstakes. Now, in that instance, the form of the prize is an extra McDouble. In this instance, the form of the prize is money. It doesn't change, and there are no prescriptions that define what the prize has to be. Our statute doesn't categorize it as such. And
Counsel, can we talk about, I want to ask you about the kind of consideration element. I understand your argument that 100.16 should be an exception to that, but let's put that aside for a minute. And I want to ask you, so assume for the purposes here that obviously your machines can be used. The machines can be used in a way that doesn't actually win a prize or not. How does that defeat the statutory definition, which seems to indicate that if you have a contrivance which for consideration affords you an opportunity to win a prize, which you're machines your client has indisputably seemed to do, at least under some, if not most, of its uses. How does that not meet that definition simply because they can be, in fact, are often used in that way?
Your Honor, that's a good question. Now, it's important to note that 945.01 sub 3, which defines what a gambling machine is, defines it by stating that a gambling machine must have four elements. Now, Wisconsin takes a very functional approach, not a visual approach, to what constitutes a gambling machine, meaning it needs to be a contrivance which for a consideration affords the player the opportunity to obtain something of value. Now, the term consideration isn't defined, but putting aside the lottery definition where it does appear, now, if you were to come up with a definition of consideration under circumstances, it's important to note that the consideration must be the thing affording the player an opportunity to obtain something of value. Here, you're never required to pay to play. So the consideration can't be the thing of affording you the opportunity to win a prize under the definition.
Yeah, counsel, I understand your position that that there are uses of the machine that might not meet that definition. But would you disagree with the fact that there are uses that meet that definition?
Yes, Your Honor. Because if you look at the plain verbiage of the gambling machine statute, assuming we weren't going to construe the actual meaning of consideration, which at some point we're going to have to do in the state of Wisconsin under the gambling machine statute, if you look at the plain words, it says a gambling machine is a contrivance which for a consideration affords the player an opportunity to obtain something of value. There is no use under which any sort of consideration, to the extent it does exist, actually is a thing affording the player an opportunity to win something of value. So that in of itself negates the application of the gambling machine subsection definition to the contrivance.
So if I put in $10 into one of these machines for the express purposes of wanting to win something of value in return, and I have no intention of taking advantage of any charging mechanism, have I used a contrivance for a consideration which afforded me the opportunity to win something of value?
No, Your Honor, because, because there is a free play option and because you're never required to pay to play, because you could have very easily requested an unlimited amount of coupons for free entry to participate in the same promotion, that wouldn't be gambling. And if that were the case, under no circumstances would any legal promotion or sweepstakes be legal or be applicable or acceptable in the state of Wisconsin. The statute doesn't call, and again, this is a little bit weird because we're talking about the definitional aspects of a penal statute without any, without talking about the portions of the statute that deal with the crime, where we start talking about the proof required. But the statute or the gambling machine definition talks doesn't have anything to do with the intent of the player or whether or not the player wants to gamble or has an intent to gamble. It's a very functional definition. As long as you have a couple of these things, or as long as you can negate one of these elements or a couple of these elements, there can't be gambling. It's not looked at from the perspective of just the intent of the player. Now, certainly, maybe there may be other circumstances if you go into the penal statute, but again, talking about whether the element of consideration appears, which I also have to say, the definition of a lottery and a gambling machine are very similar in the sense that the consideration must be the very thing affording you the opportunity to win something of value, winning a prize in this instance.
I understood your argument to be that this court needs to basically find that these devices met the definition of the impact promotion exception under 100.162 in order for you to prevail. Do you agree with that statement?
There is a separate scenario under which we do prevail, which is finding independently that there is no consideration. We propose that because, again, in doing the rigors of a very, the statute tends to be, is a very tasking statute to interpret. We felt that the only way, one of the ways, I should say, to breed some comprehensiveness into these closely related statutes is to also hold that applicable. Because again, you're dealing with a promotion, which gets me to a point, one of my points, which is the starting point, the appropriate starting point. When dealing with a market and promotion, the appropriate starting point for such analysis in terms of the legality, if we're going to look into the into the statute, should be 100.16, which is a marketing statute that was specifically created to deal with sweepstakes. Now, the problem that we see and the problem that currently exists is the Court of Appeals has put us and put the state and other promoters in a position where the use of devices cannot be combined with a legal, so an otherwise legal sweepstakes. It creates a situation.
Counsel, I get that, and I understand how they analyzed it and how the trial court analyzed it as well, but let's just assume for the sake of argument that you are correct, that 100.16 applies. Tell me how you still meet this exception under 100.16 sub 2, specifically E, where it has to be randomly distributed game pieces. And I know you've made two arguments in that regard, but even if the pieces are digital, how do you get them to be randomly distributed? That's the first question. The second question is, what does impact mean in your context? How could an impact promotion possibly apply to your devices?
Well, those are very excellent questions, and I'll take the first one. Regarding element E and F, as you do know, the Court of Appeals, the Circuit Court, did go through that analysis and took issue with E and F. Now, in order to find that E wasn't applicable or wasn't met, the Circuit Court and the arguments postulated by the state is that you require, or there has to be physical game pieces. Now, if you look at the plain reading of the statute, there is nothing that states in there that physical game pieces are required or what a game piece actually is. And there's nothing, if you read it comprehensively, it also gets at the idea that game pieces are not required for the facilitation of an impact chance promotion. Because again, in various aspects, you are given two methods in which to participate. There are traditional sweepstakes that do allow for game pieces, some of the older types, and there's some. And actually, I would say most service-oriented and most sweepstakes that we have today in the state of Wisconsin that run digitally do not require actual physical game pieces. And so, and then as it relates to F, again, the same analysis by the court was that in the absence of game pieces, they can be randomly distributed. However, if you read the plain verbiage of F, it says all prizes are randomly awarded if game pieces are not used in the promotion. And here, all prizes are randomly awarded. There is a random software generator that allocates who gets, who wins, and who doesn't win, depending on the circumstances. And so, for those reasons, we felt that we met those requirements. Now, as it relates to your second question, and Your Honor, could you please remind me of your second question?
That means I have to remember my second question. I actually don't remember my second question, but let me ask you a follow-up on what you just said. Is your argument now then that there's not game pieces, period? And then I think it was NPAC was my second question. How do you get to NPAC?
But if you
don't have to have any game pieces at all, then why would this subsection even apply as an exception to you? Pieces. We can't read out game pieces out of what the statute says.
You can't. And we also in our brief, we provided an alternative way to interpret that. Again, because nothing talks about physical game pieces, it's important to note that the statute can be read to allow for electronic game pieces, which is exactly how most sweepstakes are ran. We give a bunch of examples of some very popular ones. And I also want to get to something that I think is important. If compliance with 100.116, for example, does not totally negate the application of Chapter 945, there will be no sweepstakes in the state of Wisconsin, because every sweepstake could also be deemed as a bet. Because what's also very important about the definition of a bet under Chapter 945 is that it does not specifically include an exception with the use of an impact chance promotion. And obviously, that's certainly not what the legislature intended. We know this because of the history of prohibition to regulation to the ultimate adoption of in legalizing sweepstake promotions. And it would also fly in the face of statutory construction principles, which demand that statutes must be read, closely related statutes must be read to avoid absurd and unreasonable results. The similarities between a sweepstake, a lottery, and a gambling machine is that they all require consideration. To hold consideration as being in different things, depending on what we're talking about, when they all generally relate to the same type of activity, would create an ad hoc version of how to interpret these sweepstakes and other sweepstakes and the ones that have currently and previously been recognized as being legal in the state of Wisconsin. It's also important to note that at some point, and in coming up with a definition of consideration, to the extent that this court deems Chapter 945 applicable, the appropriate place to start shouldn't be the dictionary. The term consideration is a legal term of art. And according to this court's decision in the state of Madison, when you have a term, the very same term that has been used and defined in the very same chapter in which it appears, dealing with the very same activity that we're talking about, the term must be uniformly interpreted and construed. And again, another problem with the Court of Appeals decision.
The reason for that rule is so that your average practitioner or person interested in what the law requires would look at that statute and say, well, This is the same term in this part of the statute as the other, and therefore, absent anything else, it must mean the same thing, right? Isn't that the reason for that rule?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
As the court noted in Wisconsin Carrying v. City of Madison, the purpose of statutory construction is to determine meaning and to give it its full and intended effect. Statutory language, as we all know, can't be interpreted in a vacuum. It has to be interpreted as a whole.
Well, that's exactly right. So the problem I see with your argument, perhaps you can help me get around it, is that the definition of consideration upon which you rely is applicable only to the subsection of the statute dealing with lotteries. And so a person interested in understanding what the law requires with respect to gambling machines and lotteries would look at the statute and say, well, here's the definition of consideration, but it says that this is only applicable to lotteries. Wouldn't that suggest to the person that consideration might mean something different in other parts of the statute?
Counsel, your time has expired. You may answer Justice Kelly's question, but please try to make it brief. And then if you want to expand more on it, you have another 5 minutes for rebuttal that'll remain.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Justice Kelly, yes, the term in this subsection may seem to give one cause for pause, and that's very true. However, the fact still remains that the term consideration under the definition of gambling machine remains undefined. And if you also look through the statutory amendments, it becomes quite clear that once upon a time, lottery actually, the definition of a lottery appeared before the definition of a gambling machine. And the legislative committee notes of 1953, which led to the enactment of the gambling machine statute, the first enactment of it, specifically notes that a gambling machine, the playing of a gambling machine oftentimes and will always involve the participation in a lottery or a bet. We're not asking to go to a different chapter. We're asking that the term consideration have some consistency in the chapter in which it appears. And for those reasons, we think that we would ask that this court reverse the Court of Appeals decision and find in favor of the respondents. Thank you very much, Justice.
Yes, thank you. And as I said, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Attorney Roth, are you ready to go?
I am, Your Honor.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Assistant Attorney General Colin Roth on behalf of the respondents. At the risk of invoking an overused cliche, I simply have to here. If it looks like a gambling machine, works like a gambling machine, and pays money out like a gambling machine, then it probably is a gambling machine. I think these machines clearly look like gambling machines. The company buys $2,000 worth of video gambling equipment, adds $100 worth of phone charging equipment to the top. They work like gambling machines. Players deposit money, wager money on a video slot machine that's just like what you would play at a casino. And they pay out money like a slot machine. If you have any credits left over after you play the video slot machine, you can exchange those credits for cash. Now, I think that is clearly an unlawful gambling machine under Chapter 945, whether or not there are cell phone chargers attached. So QuickCharge's only argument that I can see is that its machines are similar to legitimate promotional efforts like Coca-Cola's bottle cap prizes and McDonald's Monopoly contests. Yes.
I can see where if it walks like a duck and looks like a duck was irresistible given the circumstances, but we do have a statutory definition that this needs to satisfy to be a gambling machine. So let's focus on that. Quick Charges Council says that a gambling machine is simply something that operationalizes a lottery. Do you agree with that as a general proposition?
I don't, Your Honor. And the reason I don't is I think the legislature very easily could have, when it set out to proscribe the use of gambling machines, it could have done so in that sort of recursive way in that it could have defined a gambling machine as a contrivance used to conduct a lottery. And I think if that was the case, then QuickCharge might have a decent argument that you could then look to the definition of a lottery and the exceptions there too in deciding whether a gambling machine is lawful or not. But that's not what the legislature did here.
Right. They gave just so I make sure that I have the universe of meanings clear. So, but for the exception to the definition of consideration under the lottery subsection, basically the gambling machine definition is describing the conduct of a lottery, correct?
I would say that the other three elements aside from consideration are comparable in the two statutes. But I'm not sure it's quite accurate to say that.
Not just comparable, it's exactly the same, right?
I will concede that, yes. And I guess what I would say is the difference between the two lies in the mechanism by which the gambling-like activity is carried out. Gambling machines obviously are contrivances, whereas lotteries are not. And I think just at a conceptual level, there's a very rational reason why one might distinguish between the two in a way that makes the gambling machine definition possibly a little stricter. And I think it's simply that the legislature, I think, reasonably decided that allowing gambling activity to operate through machines is more dangerous in the sense of I think there's clearly a heightened risk when someone sits down at a slot machine that the sort of typical problems that I think we set out to solve when we ban gambling really manifest themselves more. I mean, it's just much easier to sit down at a slot machine and play it again and again and again and thereby lose all your money than through these more non-mechanical type promotions where you might have a little time to cool off. So that's just another way of explaining why I think it's not crazy to think that you might have a more strict definition in the gambling machine statute, which is exactly what we see.
Yeah, let's explore the idea that this is similar to McDonald's. I'll use Chick-fil-A because that's my weakness. So I'll use the Chick-fil-A app to order lunch. And let's say that it gives me an opportunity in doing that to enter a contest by which I might receive a cash prize. Would that run afoul of the definition of gambling machine?
I want to answer your question in two ways, Justice Kelly. I think the first way I have to answer it is I think all of these hypotheticals are really a red herring here in the sense that I have not yet heard really a single argument from the other side that clearly explains how these machines that we're dealing with here in this case do not fit the definition of gambling machines under 945.01 sub 3.
I think you're right, but I think the hypotheticals are important because at the end of the day, we have to write an opinion. And we need to write it in a way that does not inadvertently cast a net broader than the statutes are meant to cast the net. So how would this work? When I order lunch on my cell phone through the Chick-fil-A app, and that gives me an opportunity to win a prize as a consequence upon buying lunch through the app.
So the second, you may not like the way I preface this answer, but I promise I will get to your hypothetical. The second thing I would say, though, is I don't know that it's a good idea to start supposing what the legislature did and did not intend to ban through these statutes.
Not supposing. So all I'm looking at is how the language would actually apply. I'm trying to figure out how broadly it does apply. So just take the statutory definition of gambling machine, and how would that impact ordering lunch on an app on a cell phone with an opportunity to win a prize.
So I think the key issue in your hypo, obviously, is whether there is consideration. And I think the difference is between quick charges machines and the Chick-fil-A hypothetical. And I think Your Honor really got at this well in the opening colloquy, which is when you buy the Chick-fil-A sandwiches, you are paying for them. You don't get your money back after you eat the sandwiches. There's consideration for the product that you buy from Chick-fil-A. Here, these machines operate fundamentally differently in the sense that the only way that you leave that machine with less money than you came to it with is by playing the chance game, by playing the slot machine. And so I think that's the core difference, is there's consideration in one and not in the other for the opportunity to win a prize.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so so let's put a little finer point on it then. There are actually, as far as I can tell here, there are actually two types of machines at issue. There's the quick charge machine and the power-up machine, and they operate a little bit differently. So in the quick charge machine, you can insert the dollar, charge your phone for a minute, get the dollar back at the end of that, right? Mm-hmm. With the power-up machine, you don't have that opportunity. You put the dollar in, you can't just turn around, wait for the phone to charge and get that dollar back. You actually have to play the promotion. So in that circumstance, it's not like the hypothetical that I had constructed, where you go to McDonald's, you buy the hamburger, you eat it, and then you hand the receipt in and say, I want my money back. In the power-up machines, it's different. You wouldn't be able to hand in your slip and get the money back that you use for charging the phone. That actually, you actually have to use that money to do the promotional game. So that's a little bit more like, McDonald's or Chick-fil-A. You go in, you buy the sandwich, and what you're actually buying is two things, the sandwich and the opportunity to participate in the promotion, right? So the power-up machines seem to match that pattern. So how would you, is there a distinction to be made between the two of them? And is the power-up machine, is its functionality much more similar to buying a sandwich at Chick-fil-A through the phone with an opportunity to participate in the promotion?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And the reason I still think there's a fundamental difference is the way a slot machine works. And I understand it in the power-up hypo where you have to, say you put in a dollar, and you essentially have to spend that dollar. That is, you can't cash out for a dollar or less. And in that way, one might argue that you've purchased a product. I still think you are able to wager money on the chance to win a prize in that hypothetical for anything that goes above and beyond a dollar. So say you put in a dollar in the power-up, you wager 50 cents and you win $5. So your charging time is still going. Now you have $5 worth of credits in the machine. You could cash that extra $4 out. You know, the dollar purportedly goes to the charging. You've got $4 extra dollars now sitting in the machine. You can play and wager that. That's cash. That's cash in the machine. That is credits convertible to cash. And you can play any amount of that $4 and bet it on a new spin at the wheel, so to speak. And I think in that sense, you still, that is quite literally the definition of consideration for the chance to win a prize. And so while it may be true that the dollar has to be used, the machine still affords you the opportunity to wager essentially free money on the chance to win a prize, which again is consideration.
Right. So the distinction then, would you agree, is that with the power-up machine, that to the extent that you are able to take the proceeds of whatever the prize was, right? You played the promotional game once and you get the $4 extra. If you are then able to take that prize and continue wagering beyond that point without buying another product, that is what would make, that's when gambling commences.
I agree with that, Your Honor. That's exactly how I would characterize it. And I think The crucial thing to recognize is I expect the response from my friend on the other side would be, well, you don't have to do it that way. You don't have to go above and beyond and actually wager winnings on additional spins at the wheel. But I think if you look at the statute, it doesn't require that every single person that sits down at the machine actually use it in that way. It simply requires that the contrivance affords you the opportunity to win something of value. And I think it's undisputed that every single machine at issue here, whether the quick charge machines or the power-up machines, afford you that opportunity. Every single machine is set up to let you wager at some point winnings on additional spins at the wheel, which is consideration.
So let's concentrate on the power-up machine for a moment. If it was programmed other than the way it currently is programmed, if it was programmed so that you put your dollar in and you get your charge time and you get one shot at winning something and that's it, would that run afoul of the gambling machine statute?
So I think there are situations in which that could be a trickier question, but I don't think that's a hard question here, because I still think what's undisputed is that when you are putting the money into the machine, you are getting two things. You are not just getting the product, the quote unquote product. And I have to say, I have to at least register my disbelief that there is a bona fide product here, in the sense that anyone would go to a gas station and pay a dollar a minute to charge their phone. I mean, this is not a bottle of Coca-Cola or a Big Mac. I mean, this is something that you could just ask the attendant at the gas station to plug in your phone, and he'd probably do it for you.
Disbelief noted, and I think that there is seemed odd to me as well, shall we say? But of course, what we're doing is not inquiring into the value of what is received in exchange for the consideration, but simply whether it satisfies the definition of the statute.
I understand, Your Honor, and I do think that even in your last hypo, which is you essentially get one spin at the wheel, you're still buying two things fundamentally when you put that money into the machine. You're buying, arguably, the product. Let's just assume for the sake of argument that there is a legitimate product here. But you're also buying the chance to win a prize. And I think it's simply, it's more than just, elevating form over function. I mean, it's to ignore that you're clearly part of the consideration that you deposit in the machine for the spin at the wheel is for the chance to win more money. You simply can't ignore that fact. That is one inseparable piece of what you're buying. Just to finish my thought.
Counsel?
Yeah, so I just need to follow up on that real quick. So that is, I agree with you. You can't split out the consideration and say, well, the consideration is for the charging time and there's no consideration for the chance to win a prize. But that would be equally true with the Chick-fil-A app, buying a sandwich and an opportunity to win a prize. You would have the consideration is for both of those, right? And that's the whole point of the impact promotion exception in 100.16, is because we do understand that consideration is for both of those. And so the question comes back to then, because that is true, because the consideration is for both, would the Chick-fil-A promotion run afoul of the gambling machine definition?
Your Honor, I don't want to stake the state's position here on a future case, but I think it could. And this was what I was getting at earlier when I said I think there are reasonable reasons why the legislature might want to draw a stricter line when we're dealing with gambling machines. Now, I think if you try to incorporate the impact chance promotion exception here, which the legislature did not cross-reference it, and I think Justice Dallet was exactly right. If you look at the promotion itself, it's phrased in terms of packs, which I think indicates it's for physical products. I think that reflects an understanding by the legislature that if you start allowing these kinds of promotions to be run on machines, this is exactly the kind of thing that you're going to see all over the place. Is
I think celebrity. Justice Ann Bradley is waiting to ask you a question.
Sure. Yes, Justice
Thank
Bradley.
You. I want to return to the words of the statute. We've been discussing consideration. What about contrivance? I confess lack of familiarity with this Chick-fil-A app, Justice Kelly, that apparently is one of your favorites. Can that conceivably be a contrivance? Sub 3, defining gambling machine, uses the term a gambling machine is a contrivance. Of course, you look at lottery definition, sub 5, a lottery is an enterprise. Of what moment do you give to the words machine and contrivance, especially in relation to the language that's chosen in sub 5, lottery?
I think it's sort of the point that I've been trying to get at a few different times this morning, which is that in the gambling machine provision, the legislature is indicating an intent to, by talking about machines and contrivances, to target activity that's facilitated by any sort of mechanical or electronic device, whereas in the lottery provision, it's for lack of a better term, non-mechanical and non-electronic forms.
Then let me follow up, because it seemed to me that you were somewhat acquiescing that this app for a carryout could run afoul of 945.01 sub 3. I don't understand that. I don't see how an app is a machine that's a contrivance.
So Your Honor makes an excellent point. And I think that we get at this in our brief also. I mean, one way to think about these kinds of facilitating, you know, scenarios where it's a, you're accessing a website or you're using an app to participate in some sweepstakes is that the machine itself is not the, you know, the iPhone or the iPad or the computer is not itself the thing that's determining whether you win a prize. I mean, it's not running the software that's determining whether you win money or not. It's just allowing you to access, an ordinary purchase and the promotion is sort of run elsewhere. But I think they're tricky questions, which is why I started, you know, answering Justice Kelly's set of hypotheticals with, you know, these are very fact specific questions here. And I think it's hard to say without a concrete case before us whether, you know, how this sort of Chick-fil-A app might be analyzed. I do think there is a danger with defining contrivance too narrowly and, leaving out, electronic devices in some scenarios, but not others. Because again, it just gives more holes for people to wiggle through and come up with these sort of creative ways to operate what I think is obvious to everyone is gambling activity. So I don't want to say that the app is never a gambling machine, because I think there are circumstances in which it could be depending on how it works, which is why I'm kind of pushing back against some of these, because I really do think they're very fact-specific questions. Sorry, Justice Hagedorn, please go ahead.
Yeah, counsel, one of the things that you talked about in your brief and it was discussed is that maybe the free play option has never been used. Just sort of veered a little bit here. Is that relevant to our analysis in any way? And if so, how?
Your Honor, I don't think it's relevant in the end. I think if there had been one, two, three, four, 10, 20 free play requests. I don't think that that's determinative. Again, the question is whether the machine for consideration affords you the opportunity to win a prize. And it's the opportunity that's all that's required. So some people use the free play option. Everyone else who puts money into it is, there's consideration and they're gambling.
So let me just to play that out a little bit further here. Imagine that the machine, you could actually say pay for charging your phone, or you could gamble on it. And let's say the record showed 90% of the time people used it to charge their phone and 10% of the time they gambled on it. How would you analyze that question, assuming the same machine in this case with the slight tweaks that I've given in my hypothetical?
Of course. Obviously, I'll point out that that's not the record in this case. There's no evidence of that. And I would emphasize, I think that's an important point. We tried to get that information in the trial court. These machines are set up precisely not to gather that kind of information. And I think it's really for this very purpose, so that there can be this ambiguity about who's playing and who's charging and whatnot. But leaving that aside, I'll answer Your Honor's question. And I still don't think that matters. And again, it's because if you look at the text of the statute, it does not require every single person to use the machine in that way. It just requires that the machine has the option to be used in that way. And so it's not disputed in this case that every machine has that option. And I expect to hear again that, you know, some idea that, well, if you haven't shown that it's actually used in every circumstance, as a gambling machine, then you can't say any of them are gambling machines. That's just not what the statute says. You don't have to show that everyone was actually used in that way. You simply have to show that they're set up to allow that kind of gambling functionality. And that's what we have here. It's undisputed that every single one of them, even if 90% were used for charging, every single one of them allows you to wager money on the chance to win a prize. Either up to the amount you invested, to Justice Kelly's point, in the power-up machines, or above the amount you invested in the power-up machines. Every one of them allows that kind of activity. And so the option for you to charge your phone and not participate in the gambling is I think, ultimately irrelevant. And so the fact that there had been no free plays requested, It's sort of a colorful fact that illustrates the point, which I think everyone recognizes here, that these are being used for gambling. I mean, if they were not, you might expect to see a free play request or two, but you don't. And so I think I really do want to step back, though, and emphasize that what we have before us are a specific set of machines with a specific set of characteristics. And I have to say, I still think it's very, very clear that every one of them meets the four elements of 945.01 sub 3. Now, if there are harder cases out there, I really think it's up to the legislature to address those edge cases that we think, you know, may be problematic. I mean, if we're worried about the Chick-fil-A app, Again, I don't think we can just assume that it would be absurd to cover all apps like that. I think, again, it's reasonable to conclude that the legislature did want to broadly ban activity of this nature. And I think one easy way to see that is to look at the Constitution itself. It says in Article 4, Section 24, that the legislature may not authorize gambling in any form. So I think that's the interpretive backdrop against which we should be looking at this activity in these statutes. If there's any ambiguity, which I don't think there is here, I think the constitutional text clearly requires us to interpret any ambiguity against the gambling activity, not in favor of it. And that's sort of what I hear the other side saying, that if there's any question at all, we should be allowing this activity that we all think is gambling. And I think that's just precisely the opposite default principle from which we should be starting. The default principle here is gambling is unlawful. The Constitution says the legislature cannot authorize it. And to say that that this statute here, the way it's crafted, without referencing impact, you know, the impact exception and all that, still somehow through a textual analysis that I still can't really grasp in my head, allows us to go and use this other exception. It's just twisting ourselves into knots that I don't think we need to do when the plain language and the facts before us are so crystal clear.
Quick follow-up, just on the contrivance piece briefly. My understanding of the arguments is that they've essentially conceded that point, that their really only argument is that consideration, whether there's consideration here, and then the interplay of that with the exception in 100.16. Is that your understanding of the argument as well on contrivance?
I think so. The only reason I talk more about it is there's this sort of idea that all a gambling machine is a device used to conduct a lottery. And so I think the only reason we need to look at the word contrivance is simply to conclude that, you know, that word is what creates the difference between the gambling machine prohibition and the lottery prohibition. You know, one is not a device used to run the other. I mean, they're both different ways to facilitate gambling-like activity. And when I say gambling-like activity, I mean the other elements that are common among these anti-gambling statutes, you know, consideration for the chance to win a prize. And that's what we mean when we say gambling-like activity. And there are many different ways that can happen. I mean, obviously, people have been very creative throughout history. This is not a new thing, you know, under the sun. The last iteration were machines that sold long-distance phone cards. Back, you know, even longer ago in the early 20th century, they would dispense, you know, mints. And so you've always had these different tactics where operators try to, you know, package two things together and say, well, you're buying a product, you're not buying the chance to win a prize. And so I think, you know, that's exactly what the legislature was trying to combat here. And I think the statutory text is clear. I think the characteristics of these machines are undisputed and fall within the plain text. I think you can deal with hypotheticals and distinguish those away if this court is at all concerned about them. We've talked about that a lot today. But I really do think in the end, I hate to, it's a point I was sort of harping on last week, which is, you know, we start with the text and lead it where it follow it where it leads. And I think that's what we have to do here. And if the legislature is concerned about, you know, making sure that everyone understands that sweepstakes are okay, it can do its job and it can amend the statute. I'm sure people, Coca-Cola and McDonald's, will be, you know, lobbying if they think that now, you know, their operations are threatened. And that's how it should work. You know, if there are problematic cases, the legislature can handle them. And I think here it's clear that what we have before us is unlawful. And unless there are any other questions, I would just encourage this court to affirm the judgment of the trial court and court of appeals. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Attorney Opheli, are you ready for a rebuttal?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. What we've just heard is a conclusion in search of concrete reason. As a matter of fact, you need to just take the words of the government. It looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, so it must be a duck. But for the fact that that's not what the statute says, but for the fact that there are other variations in other states of this exact same statute where they've taken that approach. They've said, hey, if it has lines, if it plays roulette wheels, if it plays this sort of game, it's always going to be a gambling machine. Some states that come to mind would be California, for instance, Georgia, for instance. In Wisconsin, we've taken a functional approach. So unfortunately, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, you have to prove that it's a duck. And right now, the government can't prove that. And the whole idea and the whole premise of the case that the state has presented is to draw up these broad assumed emotional reactions as it relates to gambling in order to come up with a resolution. But the problem with that is it leaves too many questions unanswered. For example, you will, this court would have to find that there is such a thing as a gambling machine per se, which would in effect overrule the Court of Appeals decision in State v. Hahn and a Dahlman decision, which specifically says that in order for something to be a gambling machine, it has to be shown to have gambled. The state conceded in here that there is no evidence on the record that the people, the participants, gambled on it. I mean, and that I think in and of itself is should negate any broad prescriptions about this device as being gambling machines. It also bears to mention, and I'm going to read directly from the Senate Bill 100 Commentary Notes of 1953, which enacted the gambling machine statute. And it says, subsection 3, which at the time included the gambling machine definition, describes a particular device used in gambling. Although a person who plays a gambling machine undoubtedly makes a bet or participates in a lottery, he usually does not think of his conduct in those terms. And therefore, the conduct and that of the person who maintains the machines are treated in this chapter. The comments make clear that a gambling machine is simply something that's used to run a lottery or a bet. The plain statute, the plain language makes clear that a lottery and a gambling machine are very similar. One deals with an activity in a much broader context by using the word enterprise. The other deals with a physical manifestation. As it relates to the hypotheticals that were asked, those were very pointed hypotheticals, and that will be the reality. Now, the state may want to skirt away from it by giving questions or giving arguments along the lines of, well, the machine in those contexts doesn't necessarily determine chance. Again, there's nothing in the statute that says that the machine itself has to be the thing determining chance. What this leads to is an ad hoc interpretation and implementation by the state, picking and choosing when it shall prosecute and not prosecute. And this is important because this is a penal statute. Now, it's come in the form of a declaratory action from a business, but this, there are felonies and misdemeanors for violating these laws. And so it's important that we get it right. It's important that it's not left ad hoc to when the circumstances determine. As a matter of fact, yes, the example you gave, Justice Scalia, and I think Justice Bradley followed up on this with the Chick-fil-A, your cell phone, if this is let to stand, becomes a gambling machine. The app is merely a software. That's just a natural progression of where things will go. A vending machine that has Coca-Cola bottles that run sweepstakes in them becomes a vending machine. You know why? Let's apply the statute. Because it is a contrivance which, for a consideration, you put your dollar in, gives you an opportunity of paying something of value. You're hoping for the chance of getting one of those $10,000 prize under the bottle caps. That vending machine becomes a gambling machine. It is also important to know that this exact same proposition was dealt with in the first Hahn's decision, where the court specifically noted that in order for a device or contrivance to be a gambling machine, it must be shown to have been used for gambling. And specifically, the court says, many articles, cards, dice, and other articles used for gambling purposes are perfectly harmless in themselves, but may become nuisances if put to illegal use. And for that reason, we ask that this court breed some clarity into a penal statute and maintain some consistency and overturn the Court of Appeals decision. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, thank you both very much for your argument. It's an interesting case, and thank you for bringing it to us for decision. We are going to adjourn now. The court will meet at 1:30 in closed conference because I've had a number of administrative matters that have come up this morning, and I need to deal with them over the interim break. So we will gather again at 1:30. Thank you.